Welcome to the IT Thought Leaders interview with Tom Raftery.
Scene one, Apple, take two.
Welcome to the IT Thought Leaders Conversations, and welcome onto the show today again, CEO of PubSub, Salim Ismail. We had Salim on the show last day, and Salim discussed in some detail structured blogging, which is a new phenomenon being announced tomorrow, Tuesday the 13th, I think it is, of December. There were one or two topics, though, which we didn't discuss on the show last week, and we decided we'd go into them in this podcast. Salim, thanks once again for agreeing to do the interview.
As again, very happy to be here.
Salim, I posted up the podcast and I had tremendous feedback. Both of my listeners said it was a great interview.
one of them was your mother, right? The other one was me.
And there was Frank as well. I've got three now. Thanks for joining the group, Salim. Frank Prendergast, one of my listeners, left a few comments on the blog. He has a couple of questions he wanted me to ask you. Can I go ahead and ask you a couple of questions?
Absolutely. There's some good questions there.
Great. The first question Frank asked was, what types of content do you believe will be and should be structured? I mean, is it possible, desirable to try and structure everything, or is there a specific list of content types to be structured in structured blogging?
Well, I think there's a specific type, a set of types to be structured. Frank points out that you wouldn't want to structure what he had for breakfast, and that's absolutely right. There's a place for having raw text and being able to just say, I really hated what X person had to say on that podcast, or I really liked that CD, etc. But the structure comes into play and is very useful in a number of levels. And the more you want the information disseminated, the more it should be structured. Okay, and the more you want people to find it. Let me give you an example.
Please.
Well, do you remember my talk about the hidden web versus the visible web?
Yeah.
So the hidden web is 500 times bigger. It's all the databases of information. It's not an accident that a vast, vast majority of the world's data is structured. And the reason is it's just that much more useful that way.
Of course.
And the analogy I use is it's like Word versus Excel. Okay? In Microsoft Word, you can bold things, you can underline things, you can make them much more readable and easy, but Word is really for a human listener, a reader. Whereas Excel, you can do calculations, what-ifs, sorting, all sorts of other applications on the data itself, queries, etc. And that's how we look at the structured world. And so for anything that can use, it has numerics attached to it, statistics, something that could be used for commercial purposes and so on, you want structured information. Now, the one domain where this kind of blurs over is the reviews domain, right? When you do a restaurant review or you want a movie review and so on, you want a little bit of both. You want somebody to say, I give that restaurant a 4 out of 5 rating.
Yeah.
But here are my comments as to why.
So you give a description.
And you give a description. And those two, that one area is very important for having both sides of it, both the raw text and just a thought stream, plus some structured information that computers can use and filter on. Because I'd like to be able to say, show me all movie reviews for Lord of the Rings, and reliably get those. But I also want to see what people had to say about that or a product. Right?
Yeah.
So somebody may give a 4 out of 5 star rating to the iPod Nano, but I want to know why the 1 out of 5 was missing, and because the screen cracks frequently or whatever the aspect of it is.
Right.
So there's a number of areas where this does become a big deal, but is more important in businesses and for commercial reasons. People reporting what they had for breakfast, or the fact that they really like their holiday and readership, for personal reasons, largely may not need structured blogging in the same way.
Okay, so we've talked about things like book reviews and cinema reviews and things like that. What other kinds of applications do you see for structured blogging?
Okay, I'll give you two or three. One is event announcements.
Okay.
Right. Suppose somebody, Loic, announces, I'm doing the Layblog event, and here's the name of the event, here's the venue, here's the set of speakers, and I'm going to be the organizer. And I can then subscribe to that event and say, tell me whenever anything new gets published with Layblog in the event name. Now, somebody else says, like Robert Scoble or Tom Raftery, says, oh, Layblog, I'm going to be attending Layblog, and fills out event, etc., and marks himself as an attendee or as a speaker.
Uh-huh.
Right? Loic then signs up David Weidenberger as a speaker and can say, David Weidenberger is now going to be a speaker. I, sitting somewhere else as an attendee, can say, oh, look, a new speaker's just been announced. Ooh, and Tom Raftery is going. I didn't know that before.
Very good.
And I can get this regular trickle several months leading up to the event.
Yeah.
All the things that are going to be happening at the event, the kinds of venues, the topics, etc. And you can see the value in that.
Yeah.
Now, imagine an application is built to now read that structured data and organize it on a web page for what are the speakers, what are the topics, who are the attendees, who are the sponsors, and so on.
Yeah.
The application that can be built becomes quite different and very interesting.
Yeah.
Another example would be a job announcement. So note that every single company in the world has job offers on their website, or many of them.
Yeah.
Right now, they put it, it's a static page, it gets crawled by folks here and there, it gets pasted everywhere, etc. If you structure a job announcement saying this is the title, this is the salary, this is the grade, this is the location, here's a description, here's the qualifications we'd require, and these are well defined. There's an XML spec called HRML or HRXML, which kind of lays out the standard fields that you might find in a resume or in a job description. And if people start publishing that, a couple of things happen. One is it incites every company in the world to have a blog.
Yeah.
Where they can post up these kinds of things. Secondly, applications such as Google or Monster or ourselves or Feedster or others can just say, I'm going to collect those.
Yeah.
And I can somebody else can subscribe and say, let me know any C++ job in Cork for $100,000 or more. Right? Let me know when that happens, but don't bother me until then. Okay? And the holy grail of this is offer to sell, where you say, you take the kind of eBay kind of template and you say category, item, price, location, comments, pictures. And now I can put up an offer to sell on my blog, and it will get disseminated, and anybody who wants to see it will see it. Imagine a world, say, in a year or so, where somebody publishes on their blog, I have a set of golf clubs for sale, the brand is Ping, the price is $300, and I'm living in Cork.
Yeah.
And somebody in Fermoy has said, independently of that, I'd like to buy. I'm subscribing to any kind of golf clubs that are Ping golf clubs because I'd like to buy them, but I'll pay up to $400.
Yeah.
And now the system and applications can be built to connect the two. And where you have eBay as the marketplace today, with this paradigm implemented, the internet is the marketplace.
Amazing. It's a
and
change.
I roll that out to all the other hundreds of thousands of content types that are out there.
Wow. Yeah, that is pretty big. Frank is also curious to know, is structured blogging going to be primarily a commercial tool?
I believe you will see it being taken up in a very, very big way for commercial uses. But I think the control of that commerce is put into the blogger's hands.
Okay,
so the process today, and I'll talk about this in about three ways, structured blogging. So structured blogging is the publishing of structured information with fields and columns and so on, right?
Yeah.
There's three ways for this happening. One is somebody, an end user, a consumer on the internet, publishes a piece of information like a movie review or a product review or an event. I'm holding a kung fu practice in the local church.
Sure.
Tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Right.
And he publishes that information.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine the millions of people would do this kind of thing. I really struggled to throw the word long tail in, but we're really able to do that. Okay, so that's one type of use for structured blogging. And the reason that people will do it is because it's more findable.
Okay.
Okay, it's more retrievable, it's more useful that way.
Yeah.
Now, we launched a proof of concept plugin for WordPress do structured blogging back in March, April. And thousands of people are using it. Without even realizing what it does. You really don't want, as was mentioned the other day at the conference, you don't want RSS mentioned. You don't want XML mentioned in the structured blogging world.
Yeah.
You don't want people to kind of have to think about the fact that they're structuring information in fields, etc. All you want to know is there's a form, it has a price and a rating and so on, so that people can find it more easily. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's one key commercial use, but by an end user, in a sense.
Yeah.
The second is small businesses and organizations and so on that want to publish things. Any business wants to publish job announcements, product announcements, price changes, etc. A weather station will want to publish weather data in a structured way. Okay, and so things start being published in this in a regular defined way. Other people can use it and work on it and build tools based on it. Okay, so that's the second use, by businesses to the outside or by organizations to the outside. And then the third is organizations within themselves.
Right.
Okay, so imagine a schema called customer interaction.
Okay.
Name of customer, date, time, type of interaction, urgency of response, and a comment.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Yeah. So I run across, if I'm an employee for IBM and I run across a Dell employee in the street, and he tells me, oh, we're about to launch our new FooBar widget tomorrow, and it's really going to clean your clock in the server market. I could say, internally, I could then fill out a little schema internally saying, hey, product announcement, this is just happening from a competitive point of view, and fill out a little schema like that. If I'm an IBM employee and I run into one of the, or if I say I'm a Bupa Ireland employee, and I run into Tom Fermoy down at the local pub having a pint, and he says, oh, I really am worried about that equalization thing and da-da-da-da-da, I can come back and say, here is my interaction with this customer. And anybody else in the company who's interested in that would see it.
Well,
and there would be typically two ways of filtering that. One is, I may be interested in Tom Raftery because I'm the account manager for Tom in the Bupa world,
uh-huh.
Right? Somebody else might be interested in that. A product manager might say, show me all customer interactions regarding that product.
Yeah.
Do you see the sorting that is able to happen now?
Yeah.
All because the information is structured. Okay? Can't do any of that unless it is structured.
Of course, yeah.
And I think this might be a good segue into the business side of things, because I think the implications for publish and subscribe on businesses are quite profound.
Okay, go for it.
So we talked yesterday about, let me just go back to the point I made for people who may not have heard the original podcast, which is there's three fundamentally important ways of exchanging information. Messaging is one, which is a piece of information going from A to B. As you go up a level of complexity, you have request-response, which is one question, one answer. Like database systems, client-server architectures, the web is a request-response system.
Yeah.
And publish and subscribe is the third major form, where you ask a question and you get many answers back. And the form of the question is, right, tell me whenever X happens.
Yeah.
Okay? And now, this is what got me hugely excited about publish and subscribe in general, because I spent 10 years implementing business systems, large-scale database and request response systems into companies, and restructuring companies to take advantage of those kinds of systems. Okay?
Yeah.
Note that in a business, all computer systems and all automation systems are data-oriented. They're data-based. You collect customer data into a place and you do things with it. You collect accounting information into one place and you do things with it. And businesses spend billions of dollars on software to manage data, and then they spend even more money, 10 times that, managing the business logic surrounding the data and how that data moves around.
Okay.
Okay? However, as if we think about it, a business doesn't really run on data. A business runs on events.
Yep.
A new customer is an event. A price change is an event. a customer complaint is an event, a delayed invoice is an event, a delayed delivery is an event, right?
Sure.
So a business is really run on events. If you look at the job of any particular individual in a company, they're usually saying, whenever this happens, do this, whenever that happens, do that, whenever this happens, do X. And they're responding to events.
Yeah.
But we have no computer capability in an easy way to manage events. Just manage data. Okay?
Sure.
Now, what publish and subscribe is event management. Because you're saying to a server or to a matching capability, whenever this happens, let me know. So imagine that all your systems are publish and subscribe enabled within a company, right? And note that, by the way, that every single business in the world has an email server to serve up their messaging need, has a web server to serve up their request response needs. They'll need an event server to serve up their event needs. Okay? So the IT departments and the back ends will now have three applications or three servers and so on to manage.
So you're talking about event management, like, say, the financial controller being notified whenever an invoice goes over 30 days or something like that?
Okay. Yes. Okay, today we do this in databases using trigger processing.
Yeah.
Right? Trigger processing inside a database is horrendous because databases aren't geared for this. And let me step back and talk about that just for a second before, as an interesting little segue. We do this matching problem, right?
Yeah.
We figured out how to do this matching problem. The reason we're able to do this, I said the other day that databases handle this matching problem of reconciling new information events against stored queries at a rate of a couple of hundred events per second. And the reason why is a database is designed to store millions of data records like a telephone book. And then you execute relatively few queries against it, like give me all the Smiths. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's designed to index all that data and return you that result set. When you're doing this publish and subscribe problem or this matching problem, you're actually flipping the paradigm around. I'm storing the queries, lots of them, and now I'm executing a new data event as it happens over time. New data events are executed against stored queries.
Okay.
So a database is almost exactly the wrong construct to throw at that problem.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
We don't have the tools. We've never figured out quite how to do that. We've never built the paradigms to do it, so we use databases. And now you're behind the eight ball because you're thinking, how do I do this?
Yep.
We've learned how to manage queries so that when a new information event comes in, it can instantly find the right queries, and now you have an interesting viewpoint. So we've learned how to index queries, if you like.
Okay.
Okay. And data types and data are real integer string, but data types and queries are ranges, intervals, booleans.
Yeah.
Right? How do you index IBM greater than 60? Okay, so it's a totally different set of mathematics and a completely different problem space. So an event server and a matching capability would have these kinds of attributes around it. And what would happen is you would plunk one of these, a matching engine, down inside an enterprise. And then every system in the enterprise would publish its results. So as you mentioned, an accounting system would just publish invoicing dates and aged receivable stats, right?
Yeah.
A sales lead system, whenever a new customer or a new prospect came up, would publish new sales lead things. And people, like a CEO, could then say, tell me whenever any sales lead goes over $1 million, because that's when I want to get involved.
Right.
Right? And now he just gets notified the instant. You will do away with the need of reporting.
Yeah.
Note that this is what's called observer-driven behavior. You want the edges of the system to tell you what you want and have the system deliver it to them. And let them define it. Today what we do is we spend a lot of time defining the uses and we guess at what people want. And then we push it out to them.
Yeah.
Okay? A CEO might also say, show me when any invoice is over 120 days old because I'm going to go down to accounting and start knocking some heads around. Right? And now you sit there and just listen to various important events, and I can tweak that. It's in my control. I can tweak those knobs and say, okay, maybe it's not $1 million per sale, but maybe it's $500,000 until our sales team gets trained up enough to deal with the big ones. Okay? And you can see that what that would do.
Yeah.
Now, in industries where you have a lot of data moving around, retail, travel, financial services, I believe this will have a monstrous impact on the overall execution and the flow of the business. Imagine in a retail chain that we created a topic called a point of sale. And we just took all the fields that you have in a point of sale register and made it a topic or a schema or a structured logging schema out of it.
Okay.
And every till is just publishing its transactions.
Okay? Yeah.
And now you can say to the system, or somebody can say, show me when I... imagine a map where a board of directors could say, show us that promotion code and show it to us live as it's hitting the various stores across the country, that promotion code.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So now you create a whole new... All the business processes get redesigned around this new event flow. Okay?
Yeah.
So I think what's happening in business is rather than data having an attribute as an event, we'll have an event that has data attached to it.
Right.
So I mentioned that every enterprise has a mail server and a web server, and you can imagine the extrapolation will need an event server or a publish and subscribe server.
Yeah.
Right? Let's look at a desktop and note that every single desktop in the world has an email client for its messaging needs, a browser for its request response needs, and you'll need what we call internally at PubSub a third app.
Right?
An event management, a notification manager.
Something like a smart RSS reader.
Exactly. Now, RSS is great because it's simple. But note that RSS is based on request response. It's polling once an hour or so, checking any new feeds.
Yeah.
Right? It's a simulation. It's a crude approximation as to where we'll get to. The real third app, when we finally get to it, you'll require presence. You'll require the ability to sort events as they come in and highlight different ones. Note that along your system tray, right, all your icons on your system tray are event icons or alerting icons.
Yeah.
Right? There's virus alerting icons and email alerting icons and instant messaging icons and so on. They're all there sitting there saying, hey, whenever X happens, I need to pop up and beep and tell the user and toaster myself up.
Yeah.
Okay? But note that we only have so much space down there. You've noticed people download a lot of things, have about 50,000 system tray icons. You can imagine that we'll end up with an app that's just an alerting app, similar to an email client or a browsing client and a publish and subscribe client that sits there listening for new events. And every time in future, a virus alerting system will point and send its data to that rather than trying to register itself and so on because there's just not the space to do it.
Sure.
And blog lines and people like NewsGator get this. And so they've gone into that space saying, hey, we'll be... The question is, you know, what stops... There's no barrier to entry there. What stops Microsoft from putting a plug into Outlook that does it, and where's the business model? Or Google will do it, obviously.
Currently, there's no event management server software available. Is this all in the realms of speculation?
No, there is. It's just very heavy and clunky. It's not light, okay? The analogy here is, you know, databases have trigger processing systems.
Yeah.
SAP has event management built into it, okay?
Right.
But built into it as a side module or as an attribute of the data-oriented systems.
Okay.
It's not light, okay? The analogy would be where companies have big DB2-type relational databases for their request response needs, okay? In today's world, they have that database stuff for the heavy things and web technology, HTTP technology, intranets, wikis for the light stuff. It's still request response. It's just a lot easier to manage. Today we have heavy alerting systems on chip fabrication plants where they say, tell me, we need to know whenever this signal hits or this temperature drops so that we can stop the assembly line and so on. It's very heavy and it's custom built. Every single time. There's no easy way of just throwing something up and saying, hey, let's do this in this way. Whereas if you easily allow a system or an overall architecture to publish events and other people to subscribe to them, I think you'll see quite a transformation in how business is done. I made a rather crazy claim. I have a friend in the UK who's a retail consultant, and we've done a lot of work in retail consulting, and I made a statement to him that if you fully implement publish and subscribe into your retail chain, you'll drop the cost of doing business by somewhere between 10 and 20%. And he said, Salim, you're smoking crack. These chaps operate off single digit margins. And I said, yeah, but I stand by my thing. So we went through and worked through a few examples, and he said, bloody hell, I think you're right. Because imagine the implications for businesses and how much efficiency they've derived from web technologies.
Yeah.
Right? Easy to implement, yeah. Very simple to maintain, everybody can access them, information dissemination becomes a snap. Okay? Now imagine that same paradigm applied to the whenever question and made it very easy for people to implement whenever questions and answers to that question, but done in a very simple way and across the business. You completely transform every single job function, frankly. Okay, and I believe that publish and subscribe, fully implemented in companies, will have about 10 times the impact that request response technologies have had or web technologies have had in the same way. Web technologies are great. You can say have intranets and easy lookup lists and employee roles and bulletin boards and so on. Okay? But it's going to be great. It's going to be 10 times a bigger impact when I can say, tell me whenever, if I'm in P&G, Procter & Gamble, and I say, tell me whenever anybody mentions Tide, whether it's a research department or this kind of function, let me know. Because I'm the brand manager, right? Or if I'm in a drug company, show me whenever any trials happen with this. If say I'm a production line manager doing procurement, right? I'm in a back storeroom somewhere for a drug company, and I have to get this kind of substance, right? And I can say, tell me whenever anybody mentions that substance or any order form processes it, so that I can see what the future demand is going to look like or what the current usage looks like. Okay, don't bother me until that happens. It completely changes the paradigm of how the work is done. And I think there's inherently huge opportunities there because now you allow workers to focus on the actual exceptions and the real value-added tasks.
Just from a practical perspective, if a company wanted to roll this out tomorrow, what would they need to do?
Well, you need a client that can... You need three things. You need the server to serve up events. And there are a few companies that do this, by the way. You know, KnowNow does this, and TIBCO does this on a heavier basis.
Right.
TIBCO is a big, heavy publish and subscribe company focused on the financial world. Right. And they as I mentioned the other time, the financial markets are the one domain where this paradigm has been fully built out.
Yeah.
Because the ROI is there. Yeah. If you can make $1 million on a stock trade, then you have the money to build heavy custom gridiron systems for this. Most other industries don't have the ROI to do that, so they wouldn't do it unless it becomes the cost drops. And so the cost will drop. The three elements of this are, actually there's probably four. One is the core, the server, being able to do this. You have a client, you need a client that's able to listen to that, to those events. And then you need application processing to manage and handle that event flow. And what do you do with it and how do you present it? And then, of course, you have to have people doing it and using it.
Yeah.
We're still very much in the realms of speculation here. I mean, I can't go down to my local software shop and say, can I have an event server, please, and 5 client access licenses?
No, you can't do that yet. Yeah. Right? But you will be able to soon. And it's kind of, there's this great analogy that we make around in the 70s, right, when you had to build a database app. Note that a database, right, is nothing but a retrospective search engine. For structured data, as opposed to unstructured data.
Yeah.
So a database is an XML retrospective engine. Okay. Now, in the 70s, when you had to build a database application, you had to go and write the database, right? You had to pull out your textbooks and figure out how to do B-trees and index files and block management and memory management and so on, and build it from scratch. Okay, and everybody built a database from scratch in those days. Eventually, Oracle and DB2 and people like that came along, and said, look, we'll build this widget called a relational database. And you can just tell it, give it the schema, and it'll index it and manage all the data for you.
Okay.
Okay? Yeah. Now, today, when people talk about building a database application, they're giving a schema to a relational database engine and making spending most of their time making the forms look pretty. Right? So and that's great. That's exactly what the evolution should be, where you take the heavy lifting out of a certain application and let people focus on the creativity and the logic. In what we're doing is doing the same thing now for event processing. But if you want to build an alerting application, you have to build it from scratch.
Okay.
You have to say, okay, I'm going to get this data and I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to store my queries over there. I'm going to have that kind of a system to do this. And you build it from in a customized way every single time. What we've built is a general ability to manage events. So, for instance, on our engine, which is a general engine, it can handle any XML schema. And have you been to New York City? I presume you have if you're Irish. If you come to New York, you know, we could build an application for the New York subway or the London Tube, let's use that example, where I could say, tell me whenever there's a problem on the district line between 8 and 9 in the morning on a weekday, alert me on my mobile, please.
Yeah.
Okay? Or somebody else says, I go in and out of Victoria Station all the time. If there's more than a 10-minute delay there at any given point, let me know. You get the idea. Now, the train companies and the tube have this information in terms of what's the train line, where's the problem, what stop, what's the delay in minutes, and maybe a reason code. Okay, you can imagine building a system like that today would require an extraordinary amount of heavy lifting. Lookup lists, just extraordinary amounts of infrastructure. It costs you millions of pounds. If you used a system like ours, you basically tell the engine, here's the schema of the event I'm sending you. Here's a form that you allow people to subscribe to it, and you point data at it, and you're done. It would take us about 2 hours to build that application.
So are you saying that PubSub are selling their event routing engine for sale to companies?
Eventually, right, we will get there. Right now, it's an ASP model, and it needs to be productized and so on. Okay.
Yeah,
but eventually, you can imagine that that's a component that people will sell and license and will compete based on the feature set and so on, and people like Oracle will try and do it, et cetera. It's the other half. The other half, we call prospective search or publish and subscribe the other half of search. Okay, search engines, databases, all our computer systems today are largely based on retrospective search, whether it's for the indexed documents or for structured information like databases. We're now moving, I think the computing paradigm generally moves to the other side now, and we focus on the other half of the problem, which is the prospective search side, tell me whenever, event management. Okay? And that's kind of roughly where it goes. And you'll end up with the same gamut, like internet-scale search engines like ours, which are prospective, and then database systems that are prospective and so on. And then finally, the computing, the two will join together. Okay? Important to note that retrospective and prospective are complementary.
Sure.
Okay. Right. If I'm doing a little bit of research in my accounting system, I may say, show me all old age receivables, and you see, my gosh, this one customer is terribly late in paying. So I'm going to tick that box off and flag that chap and let me know whenever he's due to pay again so I can chase him earlier. When we use Google, we say, show me all mentions of Tom Raftery. And we say, oh, here are the 6 mentions on Google in the past. But wouldn't it be great to tick off a box that said, alert me in the future, tell me whenever this appears in the future? Right? We've always had the technology for the last 20 or 30 years, frankly, to do the retrospective side. Blogging and this general paradigm is having us now move for the first time to the prospective side and focus on the whenever question. So where we're positioned is we believe this next kind of 10 or 20 years in computing will be all about publish and subscribe. We've done the retrospective side of it to death. And now we're focusing on the prospective side. And we focused very hard on this matching problem because it's a very necessary component in anything that happens going forward. I can't imagine an application going forward doing alerting or any of any sort without having to do the matching. Right? And as we move from the web being relatively few publishers in the 90s and millions of readers, to now having millions of publishers and millions of readers, you need that matching capability. We may be a little early for our time.
Hopefully not.
and I think our users would tell us definitely not.
Yes.
Anyway, you see where this is going. I think what started out, what's fantastic about the bloggers right, is that from the outside in, they're introducing this quite fundamental change that's impacting not just politics, because everybody in the world can have a way of saying, having a voice in publishing stuff, but really enabling and empowering every single individual and every single small business in the world. Right, and I think the key thing about structured blogging overall is the fact that when somebody blogs and puts up an event for, say, an offer to sell or an event announcement, they or a movie review, they retain ownership of that data.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important thing. Why give it to AutoTrader, Monster, eBay, Craigslist, except Match.com? Retain ownership of your own information.
And they, I assume the likes of Craigslist and eBay would come along and aggregate the structure.
Absolutely,
blocks.
Right. Craigslist is successful because it's free to publish, and as you give people the opportunity, they would just have to listen to what's coming off the structured blogs, and off you go.
Yeah.
So this announcement on Tuesday will be quite a sea change, as you mentioned. And we'll be getting up on stage with about 20 or 30 companies who've all kind of intuitively, you know, if you're working in the space, then you already have a good sense of this, right?
Yeah.
Sure. The Bloglines folks and NewsGator and Pluck and all those folks are all, Rojo and so on, are all involved saying, yes, we're behind this.
Well, again, Salim, you've blown my mind twice in a couple of, in as many days. I'm going to have to go in and have a pint of Murphy's now.
Well, hopefully that's a reflection of the usefulness of the comments rather than your brain being blown at simple provocations. But absolutely, you have a pint of Murphy's, and I wish I could be there to join you for that.
Thank you, Salim, and thanks to everyone who's listened. Join us later on this week when we'll be talking to Matt Mullenweg of WordPress.com. Until then, this has been Tom Raftery, your host on the IT Leaders Conversations. Thank you.
Scene 1, Apple, take 2.